I have a machine. This actual machine happens to be in Azure as well. And this is my dev test machine. It's an Ubuntu machine. And I've installed, I've gone through these steps, and I've installed, I've installed the command line interface, and it's just called Azure. So if you type in Azure, you'll see, you know, some basic commands. One of the first things that you do is go and do Azure login. And I have done this already, but I can show you what this looks like. So you would have to go enter your Azure credentials to make sure that you can access your Azure subscription. Now, Azure subscription is where you have all your virtual machines that you can manage, that can be built, right? So you can say Azure login, and you can do, you can basically, it'll ask for your username password, right, for you to log into the same username password that you use to log into Azure portal. You enter it right from your command line. And we support Active Directory integration. So if your enterprise is already using Active Directory, you know, you can actually map it to the Azure Active Directory and just right from command line, you know, get started. And then once you are set up, you can start creating your resources. So if I do this, you'll see a bunch of options. Azure VM is the verb that we use to, or the topic that we use to do actions on virtual machines. So you'll see a whole bunch of options. You can create virtual machines, you can update virtual machines, you can just do a show. You can do a lot more than just creating virtual machines. You can create extensions inside the virtual machines. You can create IP addresses and so on and so forth. So what I'm going to show you is I already have a bunch of virtual machines here. So I'm going to say Azure VM list, and it's going to list all the virtual machines that I have, provide you a very nice high-level summary. Right? What are the you know, the virtual machines that I have? What state are they in? Are they running? Are they stopped? So you can see here, you know, I have about, you know, 5 virtual machines here. You know, some of them are ready. You know, they're running. They have an IP address, a public IP address, the actual DNS name, the fully qualified DNS name. And I have a few virtual machines that are not running. You know, I've stopped them, so I don't want to pay for them, right, because I'm not using them. So a very high-level view. If you want a detailed view, you can actually go and say Azure VM show. And let me pick the demo. This is the demo that I put. And this is, all it is doing is every one of these statements is essentially, I didn't say Azure VM, it's essentially calling a REST API, right? It's just, think of it as a REST API wrapper. You get the same output, the same results that you would get if you had to write your own, you know, REST wrapper on top of our REST APIs. It's just an easy way for you to kind of interact through command line. And you can see it's basically the response body that we have nicely formatted so you can actually consume it here. And then one of the things that you could also do here is you could, you know, create your virtual machines right from here. So I won't do a creation here, but, you know, I have another demo that I'll show quickly. But I wanted to quickly show you what these options are. So obviously when you create a virtual machine, you need to say, if you have to create a virtual machine, you have to say what your base image is. So in this case, you would say, you know, I can go here. Yeah, so you can have, you basically have two options. You can say, here is the name of the virtual machine, here is the image, image in our gallery, right? So Azure has a gallery of predefined, pre-configured Linux images of various distributions. I'll talk about it a little bit more. So you can pick an image there, you can pass it in here, give a name for that virtual machine, and you're good to go. Or you can bring your own virtual machine image, a VHD image that you probably are using on-prem, and then you can create, which is the second option, Azure VM create from, if you will. All right, so now getting back to the deck. So that's the first component. You know, you have to have this. If you are not comfortable using the portal, if you're not comfortable using the PowerShell, you have to have this to kind of get going. So that's the first component. The second one is what we call as Azure Linux Agent. I talked about it briefly. The primary reason for this is to manage the interaction between the Azure's own service fabric, like the computational fabric, and the virtual machine itself. So when your application runs into some kind of a problem health-wise, you know, we can detect it and do some basic, you know, health actions. But it also does much more than that. It does provisioning. Whenever, especially for Linux virtual machines, the first time you boot up the virtual machine, you want to probably do some startup tasks, right? So you say, like, hey, you know, here is the script that I want to run right as soon as the virtual machine is created. You know, here is a set of scripts, maybe pull down a bunch of packages, open up a few ports, CloudInit is a very popular pattern there, so you know we, that's how we implement CloudInit. We also do some sort of a networking management, right? Because these Linux virtual machines are running on Hyper-V, we need to kind of configure the Hyper-V in a way that is performant for your Linux workload. So we do basic, you know, virtual machine management. Like if you guys are familiar with virtual NUMA, this is a Hyper-V technology to support NUMA-based hardware. So some of the configuration for doing that is done through Linux Agent as well. And as I mentioned, extensions as well. I'll talk about it a bit more. And it's an open source package. It's written in Python. Because we are supporting Linux and the Linux community, this is written in open source. I have the GitHub location. It's hard to read, but you know, you should be able to go look at it. In fact, you can contribute to that. The Linux Agent protocol is pretty simple. You know, it's basic health model, so you should be able to take the code, extend it, and maybe in your virtual machines you can actually do more than what we do, basically. And it's available to download both from RPM-based distributions, like CentOS or Debian-based distributions, right? You know, Ubuntu and the other distributions. All right, Linux integration services, probably the most complex and technical of all those three components, right? So this is important for any Linux virtual machine running on Hyper-V. And as I mentioned, Azure runs on Hyper-V. So any Linux workload that you run on Hyper-V virtual machine or Azure needs to have this installed. And because in the Linux community, you have a diversity of operating systems, right? You know, you have, you know, CentOS, CoreOS, Ubuntu, you know, and different, you know, versions of Ubuntu, different editions, you know, major and minor versions, just like the Windows operating system. So you want to make sure that regardless of what your starting point is, you get the latest and greatest drivers for each of these variations. You know, each of these distributions, each of these editions, each of these versions, right? So it's a huge matrix. And again, if you go to this GitHub location that I have, we actually maintain the different sets of drivers that we release it regularly to the Linux kernel upstream, and also information on which Linux distributions have already picked it up. There is a latency between when we release the fixes, Microsoft releases the fixes for the virtual machine drivers, and when the vendors, right, Canonical for Ubuntu or OpenLogic for CentOS, when these companies pick that up and then they release it. So it's important to know that, you know, there is this two companies that are involved in, you know, providing these patches. So you want to make sure whatever you're starting with, it has the latest and greatest. Or you know if it is not the latest and greatest when it is available. Very important. You know, we've seen customers who are running large workloads. They see, you know, suboptimal performance, and almost always I find that, you know, because they are running on their own version of an image that doesn't have the latest drivers. So there are two ways to start, right? The first way to start is you bringing your own Linux image. You know, you're an IT enterprise, you already have a bunch of Linux virtual machines running, Linux images. You are not interested in looking at the Azure Gallery option, which I'll talk about. So you already have everything ready to go. You just need to lift and shift to the cloud. So the basic steps are, you have to create a VHD image. As I mentioned, Azure runs on Hyper-V, and Hyper-V only supports VHD images. So if you're running on VMware, or if you're running on, you know, pick your virtualization hypervisor, you know, you have to convert from that image format to a VHD image format. So if you're using VMware, it'll be VMDK. And there are free tools available. Both VMware supports it as well as Microsoft, that you can actually convert between these formats, right? So, you know, the first thing that you want to do is convert it into VHD. You want to keep in mind that we don't support VHDX in Azure, at least not yet. So, you know, it has to be a VHD, not VHDX. And then, you know, there are some additional best practices that I've called out, which we have in our documentation. It has to be a size of 1 MB. We do all these checks to make sure that your on-ramp experience into Azure when you're lifting and shifting a custom image is predictable. Which is one of the reasons why we want to make sure that, you know, this information is available for you. A lot of the distributions, like whether it's Canonical, Ubuntu, all the different versions, or, you know, like the OpenLogic, CentOS, or CoreOS, they actually have mirrors running in all the Azure data regions. So we have about 19 regions that are in public today, and when the India region comes alive, these Linux distribution partners of ours, they'll actually run repositories mirrored in each of these regions. So if you're running an application, say, in Southeast Asia, in Singapore, or in future in India, you want to make sure that you are actually, if you're downloading packages from each of these distributions, you're pointing to the repository that's local to your region, if you will. And we have methodologies on how to kind of detect it, so you don't have to worry about all the complexity. We usually have a region-specific moniker, and the mirrors will automatically figure out where you're running, and it'll point to the closest repository. And then, obviously, once you create the VHD, you got to upload to Azure. It's a very simple process. We have a command line, as I showed you there. You point it. You basically actually move that VHD into your storage account, and then during the creation process, you just say Azure VM create from the location of your storage account that contains the VHD image, and that's it. We'll make a copy of it to the storage account where your VM will reside, and then the VM will be up. So that's one option. If you want to start from an image that we already have pre-configured and optimized for Azure, you could do that. It saves a lot of time for you, so you don't have to go find out all these components and install the Linux agent and the Linux integration services. We've done that for you. In fact, the partners who are supplying these images, the official partners, Canonical for Ubuntu or OpenLogic for CentOS, they've done that. They are the actual official publishers for Azure, so they are actually doing this work for you. So you will get the latest and greatest, so you don't have to worry about piecemealing it, right? And today, in terms of Linux distributions, we have, in fact, I can pull down this list. There's basically, these are the distributions that are available. So we have Canonical Ubuntu, all the different versions that I talked about. We have OpenLogic for CentOS, the RPM family. We have Oracle Linux. This is the Linux operating system from Oracle, which is also RPM-based that allows you to run, a Red Hat-compatible application, if you will. We have SUSE Linux. A lot of our European partners use this for mission-critical applications. And then OpenSUSE as well, which is the open version of SUSE, which doesn't come with support. And then the recent wave of operating systems in Linux that support containers, like the just enough OSs. CoreOS is a good example. It's a container-optimized OS. It doesn't have all the bells and whistles. It doesn't have a package manager. But it's an operating system purely meant for running containers, applications within containers. So you have that available in Azure as well. And we'll continue to expand this portfolio of Linux distributions as we kind of move forward. And one thing I forgot to mention here, so of all these distributions, when you think about the images that we have in Marketplace, they fall into two categories. One is your standard sets of images. We call them standard images. And then we have what we call as premium images. And the big difference between that is the support. Say you're running your Linux application in an Azure VM. You run into a problem. If it's a standard image, and if the problem happens to be Azure platform, if you have Azure support, we'll pick up the call. We'll troubleshoot it. But if the problem is actually in the application, in the OS, we won't be able to help. You actually have to go talk to the distribution vendor, right? So Canonical or OpenSUSE or SUSE or OpenLogic or CoreOS, right? One of these vendors would have to kind of troubleshoot it for you. In premium images, we have only one today, but we hope to expand it. This is SUSE. You, as long as you have Azure support and you call Azure, regardless of what the problem is end-to-end, we will troubleshoot on behalf for you, right? If the problem is Azure platform, absolutely, we'll help you. If the problem is actually in the operating system, we will call behind the scenes SUSE support and troubleshoot it for you. So for the price that you pay per minute in Azure for those premium images, you get the entire package. So something for you to consider. It's an attractive option, so you don't have to kind of deal with this vendor has this problem, and folks constantly worry about being shuttled between two different companies. So a premium images allows you a nice option to kind of go talk to a single vendor, get your problems resolved. All right. So we do have another option. If you want to kind of start from cloud, start from a gallery, we have, I talked about the Marketplace gallery, but we have also another gallery that is community maintained called VM Depot. And VM Depot is a no support open source model. It's the community, any one of you can go and contribute your own image as long as it's free software. So you can cook up your own Linux image with your own favorite set of applications and contribute it. And if people like it, they'll start downloading it and making that image better. And it's an open source way for crowdsourcing a lot of these application content, if you will. So I'll quickly show you both the examples. It's pretty straightforward. like I said, you could create virtual machines from either the gallery or the VM depot right from the command line interface that I demoed, but you can also do it from portal. So I wanted to quickly show you what the portal experience looked like. Let's see. So this is the Azure portal that's currently in preview. So what I've done is I'll start from here. So this is the home page. After I log in, I click on what we call as marketplace, and you'll immediately see a bunch of content that's showing up. So we have over 3,000 solutions in our marketplace, and as you can see, for example, we recently introduced a Docker on Ubuntu server. So this is a Docker-optimized, pre-configured canonical image that you can essentially, you know, just get started by clicking here. But, you know, you can do a lot more. So if I actually look at all the virtual machine images, for example, so I click on virtual machines, you actually have a separate role of content that is Linux only. So if I go down here, so I see this Linux-based content, and you'll see CoreOS, LESS, all these base OS distributions. But then you start seeing a whole bunch. Like, for example, Puppet Enterprise. This is the Puppet Master running on Linux that you can just click there, configure it, and you'll have a virtual machine running a Puppet Master. And like I mentioned, you know, it's a long list of solutions in our marketplace, not just the base operating system, but, you know, the entire solution stack all pre-configured for Azure. And many of them support a permanent model. So if you say, for example, choose a scalar, it's an hourly model, so you'll go ahead and create, and you'll get charged for the hourly price, right? So it's not one of those things that you have to bring your own license, even though we support that model, but we also support you being able to, you know, charge from a pay-as-you-go model, because that's where the power of cloud is, right? You don't want to pay for the entire year if you're going to use it only for a month or, you know, only for a few days. So you should be able to do that, you know, through our marketplace. And as you can see here, you know, this particular application is built on top of a Linux distribution. So you specify the same options that you would specify when you're creating a VM, a host name, a username, a password, or a SSH key. And then, you know, maybe some additional options, which region, which subscription that you want to use. And then you just say create, and your application will be created in minutes. So this is the official Azure Marketplace content. Now, if I want to go through the open source repository, right, so this is what I mentioned as, you know, the VM depot, anybody in the community will be able to create a content and publish it here. So here I'll show an example of Tomcat. This is basically a Tomcat end-to-end application, all created, being published by Bitnami, who's one of our publishers who publishes in the open source community. And creating a virtual machine here is a very similar experience. In fact, it's even better in that if you are a Linux user, you should be able to generate the script right here. So in this case, say, let's say I'm deploying this in Southeast Asia. I have the CLI command right here generated for me. All I have to do is copy it, put it in my CLI console, change the names, right? Now I have, there are some placeholders for my VM name, and that's it. I'm good to go, right? So there is over 1,500 solutions in the open source model, the open source marketplace. Again, you know, this is an option if you feel like, hey, you know, I don't want to yet go to the official marketplace. I want to try things. I don't want to pay for it. This would be a place for you to start. All right, so let's get back to... So that's the two, you know, if you want to start from the cloud, these are the two options that we have. And then I also, there's another option, which is Migration Accelerator. Maybe you say, look, I already have an application that's running on-premises. It's running on VMware, or it's running on, maybe it's running on another cloud, maybe AWS or somewhere else. I want to move it to Azure. I want to see how that looks like. So we have a tool that's out in preview, limited preview, called Migration Accelerator. And that's exactly what it does. Regardless of what your source is, maybe it's running on Hyper-V on-premises. Maybe it's running on VMware. Maybe it's running on AWS. And maybe it's Windows, maybe it's Linux. This solution, you should be able to just point there and say, you know, I want to move this to Azure. It's a one-way migration. You can make a copy of it here, and then I want to move it to Azure. And through simple click stops, you know, in your visit, you're able to kind of move that workload. It automatically creates the equivalent Azure concepts. If you have to create an availability set, it'll do that for you. If you have to create a virtual network, it can do that for you. And then at the end of that process, you would have a virtual machine, which is an exact copy of what you have on-premises running on Azure. Another simple way to start, we recently announced support for Linux, and today we have CentOS and Oracle Linux. We will be expanding the distribution support to include, for example, Ubuntu, you know, the canonical Ubuntu variations, and also the other ones, including CoreOS. Yep. So the question is, does migration accelerated cause a downtime? It is an offline operation. It's not an online operation. If you're thinking about something like Azure Site Recovery, this isn't it. This is meant for one-way migration. That said, you could use Azure Site Recovery to perform like a failover operation. There, at some point in the near future, you would see these technologies converge. So from an Azure Site Recovery service, hopefully, you know, you'd be able to leverage similar technology, whether it's a one-way migration or some sort of an active DR relationship, maybe active-active or active-passive. Good question. Can someone give this gentleman one of the goodies? Yep. Yeah, so the question is, we don't see the KVM virtualization layer here. We don't support that today, but we have the capability to support it. This should be coming in near future. All right, question.
Multiple images of CentOS, suppose. So while migration, I'll give my static IP for that server. And would it migrate all my images? It's possible to migrate all the images, the VMs basically?
You could, but it's a one at a time operation, so you would have to do one VM at a time. We will be looking at being able to do mass migration. Now if you have like, maybe not just VMs that are all running the same OS, but different versions of it, maybe even different distributions. At this point, it's a one at a time operation. You have to say, this one I want here. The reason being, Azure, now you want to make sure that in Azure, it's a supported distribution, a supported version, because people can bring unsupported versions to Azure, but then you would have a support complexity, right? So we want to be able to upfront support, some validation of what you will migrate to Azure.
Yeah, that's correct. But then suppose one of my servers has like 15 different flavors of Linux running for 15 different customers, and I would not like to, though I'll check the complexity or the support metrics what Azure supports, and I'll mark, there should be like an option where I can mark, okay, these are supported and I'm migrating only these. Yeah. So, but I don't want to spend one by one, yep, kind of thing, but if out of 15, 10 are supported, I can just take, yeah, all those 10 and just migrate at once.
No, that's good feedback. We do have a plan to be able to do a migration assessment, where you can actually look at your portfolio and say, these are qualified, you can move, these, you shouldn't probably move. Just like how we do with the Microsoft, the migration plan kit, I guess migration and planning, the MAT kit, MAT toolkit, I don't know what they stand for. That does something similar. It looks at the VM sizes on-prem and does an evaluation. So we could do something similar. That's good feedback. Yep.
Yeah, here. It's here.
Oh, there's a question, go for it.
How familiar Oracle Linux workload customizes the data disk addition to its workloads, which is there in internal and Azure?
Sorry, say that question again. I didn't get it.
Okay. How familiar the Azure Oracle Linux workload is able to customize data disk, which we are going to add to that, and any downtime required for that, and how it will be?
Yeah, no, we do have customers using Oracle Linux, and for running the Oracle database itself or any other applications. We are planning, we already have some documentation on how do you best configure an Oracle Linux VM for database applications. But if there is something missing, we would love to hear your feedback. In fact, all our documentation, I would welcome this. If you are not finding some information that's useful, right there you can actually pass a comment. We actually do sweeps of our documentation feedback and actually actively go and address that. So.
I have one more question.
Yep.
So this is regarding the data cleansing. So when you kill my VM, so we obviously kill all the data and you spin up a new VM for new data. So how you cleanse the data? Because from the hard disk perspective, data can be recovered at any point of time. Okay, so even if you reinstall, it can be recovered. So how you clean the data and how you allocate that all to the new customer?
Yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah, I'll talk about it. So the question is, when you store virtual machines in Azure, and say you delete the virtual machine, what happens to the data that was stored here? So Azure, fundamentally, I talked about it yesterday in my session, all virtual machine data is persisted in our Azure Blob Storage. And Azure Blob Storage in itself is a SaaS service. It's a, it's basically storage as a service, right? So what happens is when you're creating a virtual machine, you create your VHDs, you put them in the storage account, and say you delete them, we do deletions in the background. We do basically make sure every data that you store in Azure, it's pulled across hundreds, if not thousands of virtual machines. And only you, as a customer, owning the subscription, is able to kind of compose these, you know, hundreds of thousands of pieces and bring together as a VHD, right? So the moment you say delete that virtual machine, even though pieces of that virtual machine data is spread across and actively being deleted, there is no human way possible for anyone else besides you to read that data. So for all practical compliance purposes, it's not addressable. So what is not addressable is deleted, right? So that's basically the implementation underneath the covers.
To tell technically, it is not possible to generate that data.
It is not possible either for us, for you, to be able to regenerate the data. Once you delete it, and you know, we ask multiple questions to confirm that, that data is essentially basically gone.
Okay. And one other question regarding when you spin up the VM. So if you look at any PaaS operators, so they usually spin up in the form of containers and they install Linux VM in that similar fashion. So like that also it happens here, or is it something completely VM?
Is this a question specific about containers?
No, not containers. So what actually happens in background when I spin up any VM or SaaS services, take any kind of a SaaS service, when I ask for a web server or something like that? In that, from technical perspective, I'd like to know.
Yeah, got it. So from a platform as a service or a software as a service point of view, they all eventually run on virtual machines. And we do create virtual machines on demand. So most of these services are what you would call as stateless. They have state with them because they are multi-tenant services, but they manage their own state. An example would be if you're using SQL Server, it'll be always on. If you're using Oracle, something like Rack, where these applications are capable of managing their own state. So most of the SaaS services that are implemented architecturally fall into that category. They basically take care of their own application. So the infrastructure point of view, we just create VMs as it is needed on demand. So the application layer would essentially kind of take care of persistence. So from that point of view, you don't have to worry about residue in the ecosystem.
Hello.
So I'm gonna keep moving and then basically entertain the questions after the session in the spirit of time. We've got just about 9-10 minutes left. The other way to kind of get started is the Azure Resource Manager. Azure Resource Manager is our template-based language. I talked about it briefly. So this is the ability to kind of describe not just one virtual machine, but groups of virtual machines. In this case, I am having basically a SQL, a website, and a virtual machines in Azure, all composed in a single JSON template. And I actually want to give some examples. We actually have two examples in our marketplace, the big data solutions that we have, Cloudera and DataStax, which is the Cassandra DB. And one of the things that we've been working on, I wanted to kind of quickly show you, is right from GitHub, and I have an example of the JSON here, and this is what the JSON template file would look like, right? So it's basically defining a bunch of parameters. You'll see that we basically are creating a virtual machine here, some network interfaces, and then I'm saying once the virtual machine is created, create an extension, and then have it run a script, right? And it's very easy for me to create this. This is basically like source code that you're describing. And once you create that, you basically just have to do deploy to Azure. And what you would see is, we basically would have a front end that would look at your JSON file. JSON file, and then essentially create a UI for you. So in this case, I've actually pre-filled a UI. So basically this is an Ubuntu VM with the cross-platform CLI installed in it, right? So you don't have to go through it, do it by yourself. In one click, through this, essentially a configuration as a code JSON file, you basically deploy from GitHub and you would have a VM created. So all that does is, it created it, I pre-filled some values, and then I go ahead and say deploy to Azure, and it'll start creating the virtual machine for you. So this is another way for you to get started. If you're worried about creating one virtual machine at a time, you could go to a path where you can do a la carte, right? So in this case, for example, DataStax and Cloudera, when you go through this UI experience, you're actually creating 15 VMs of different sizes. So this is a way for you to kind of run really large applications and deploy them really, really fast. Yep. I don't know where this is going. The marketplace is not yet available in India. There's no workarounds because it's a commerce model. We are actively working on enabling the commerce model in Azure. I don't have an exact timeline. Do you want me to reduce it? Because it involves commerce, and you know it involves you know the tax liabilities in each country. You know we would have to go through you know the proper process, right? So, but you know I mean we are actively working on you know making sure that it is you know available in all regions in Asia, including India. Okay, let me keep moving forward in the spirit of time. All right. So the second section is about the DevOps on Azure. So you know, if you think about DevOps, the phenomenon of DevOps came when customers were doing a lot more than you know, a few virtual machines at the time, right? And if you think about what are the primary drivers for DevOps, it's agility. You know, the ability to kind of ship every day, ship multiple times a day, ship you know, basically ship fast, ship often, right? So that's a big driver. All IT enterprises are asking developers to ship code as fast as possible. And at the same time, make sure that things just don't break. You know, you don't want to check in bad code, but you want to be able to check in code, test it as fast as possible, release it, and deploy it in production in slices. So you know immediately when something is wrong, you can actually, you know, create a fix and then deploy into production within minutes, right? So this is this whole loop of, you know, developer productivity that has caused the DevOps phenomenon. And you want to make sure that whatever you're testing in, your development QA environment, is exactly what you know production looks like, this sense of production realism I talked about yesterday. And the last one is if you have 1,000 developers working on the same code base, deploying multiple times a day, releasing to the production, and actually testing in production, you want to make sure that whatever solution you have scales. So there's a plethora of open source tools that are enabling you to get this kind of agility, right? And Azure, you know, we fundamentally want to support all these ecosystems. And the foundational technology for supporting that is VM extensions. So I talked about VM extensions. VM extensions uses the Azure Linux agent, which is present in every virtual machine. And all it does is it basically allows you to compose from, again, it's a separate marketplace, and this is a marketplace that's available for India customers as well, because it's not commerce. It's bring your own license. But you know, you would be able to go list at all the extensions that you have and then select the extension that you want and compose it into a virtual machine. And through that technology, we've been able to kind of enable all these DevOps tools, whether it's Chef or Puppet or Vagrant or Docker. Almost all these ecosystems are integrated with Azure. So you can actually, if you're using Docker, for example, if you're using Chef or Puppet, you don't have to give up that ecosystem. You know, a Chef recipe that you wrote for managing your application, you should be able to just use it on Azure virtual machines. A Puppet module that you have created before, you should be able to use it. Salt, Ansible, I mean, regardless of the technology that you're using for deployment and release management, you should be able to use it on Azure. We also have our own first-party extensions. An example of this is the custom script extension. A custom script extension literally is in a virtual machine, in a Linux virtual machine, throughout its lifetime, if you want to do certain actions by running certain scripts, you should be able to point to a script that is located either in GitHub or in your local storage and say, execute it, either at the time of your invocation or maybe at the startup time, right? So I'll give you a couple of examples of how this would work. So we actually support the virtual machine extensions from our portal. So if I go to home, and I actually have a Linux virtual machine running, and one of the first things that I would say is, once the virtual machine is up, I would look at the list of extensions that I can install into the virtual machine. And our portal is smart enough to say, hey, this is a Linux virtual machine, so I'm going to only show extensions that can be applied on a Linux virtual machine. And as you can see here, I already have an existing extension. This happens to be the patching extension. And I can just go here, say I want to add another extension. You can have multiple extensions in your virtual machine. And say I want to pick the custom script for Linux. So you can see we've got three options here from the portal. So I click there. It gives me some information here. I say create. And then I can select the file. This is the script file that I would run, right? So in this case, Ubuntu virtual machine that installs the CLI. It doesn't take in any arguments. And I say, okay. So basically, at this point, it's going to add that extension inside that virtual machine. So it's very simple. Now, if you want to do this also from the... You can do this also from command line, of course, because everything is backed by a REST interface. So if I look at, I actually did this this morning, and I'll show you the command that I used. So this is the extension for, you know, doing a patching of your Linux virtual machine right now. Like after you run this command, you know, it'll go and do a patching all remotely. You don't have to open up any ports. Just through the same REST interface that you're doing, you should be able to say, add this extension, here are some parameters, and go do this. So this is the command. So I did it this morning. So basically, you're calling this extension. This is the name of the VM. And you pass in a set of JSON inputs, right, for this extension saying, look, I want it, and obviously I want it to be enabled, so disabled is false. I want it to run. You know, if it's reboot after patch, you know, do automatically. And I also can specify what the start time is. In this case, I'm not specifying the start time. It means that, you know, it will go patch it right now. So it's a very powerful capability that allows you to do a lot of things in scale, which otherwise you would have to go explicitly log into the virtual machine and then open up a few ports and do it yourself. We also, like I mentioned, you know, we have several first-party extensions from Microsoft. VM Access extension is one where, say, for example, you forgot your SSH key or a password. You know, without having to delete that VM, you can actually add this extension, pass in your new SSH key, and it'll automatically reset it. OS patching I talked about. Chef extension is basically the Chef ecosystem running on Azure. So many options here. We'll be adding more and more extensions as we kind of move forward. Docker on Azure, I spent a lot of time yesterday, but really quickly, you know, the containerization in Linux is really picking up. There's a lot of excitement around how customers are running, you know, dev test applications, and in some cases, they're running even large production applications, literally like hundreds of thousands of containers running on Linux virtual machines. So, you know, Microsoft has publicly talked about our partnership with Docker. We are going to integrate Docker Hub in our marketplace. We are going to work on Windows Server containers, so a customer can have applications that are running in Linux and Windows containers, all managed by the Docker API. So a lot of activity that is going on. In our CLI, we actually made some changes to support Docker container creation right from our Azure CLI that I just demoed. So a lot of options here for you to look at. Let me kind of quickly cover the third section since we are kind of running quick on time, and then I'll take questions from you guys. So the full stack on Azure. So this is an eye chart, but you know, something that you want to kind of look at. Almost everything in the ecosystem related to open source, you should be able to find here. And if we can't find here, let me know. We are really interested in making sure that whatever choice of framework, whatever database that you're using, whatever DevOps tool that you're using, you know, we'll make a way to kind of get it in our marketplace, right? So regardless of your application language of choice, right, .NET, of course, but Java, PHP, Python, Ruby, if you want databases, you know, we basically got the full spread. If you want content management systems, we've got the full spread, you know, both first party and third party. Even IDEs, right, you know, your developer environments. It's not just Visual Studio. We have plugins from Eclipse and IntelliJ, so you can actually interact both with our virtual machine service, which is the infrastructure as a service, but also our platform as a service. So, you know, developers like to kind of focus on the business logic, so we want to make sure that there is nice integration on all these layers. Really quickly on Java and Azure, so we have a lot of support both from our IaaS services as well as platform as a services all the way leading up to websites. We work with Oracle pretty closely and also the OpenJDK Foundation to make sure that Java as a type-safe language has a first-class experience on Azure. And these are a couple of initiatives that we've done. There is a toolkit for Azure in Eclipse that you should be able to download. And what it does is essentially provide similar functionality like Visual Studio for developers, Java developers, right from Eclipse to manage into Azure. We have released a plugin, a similar plugin for IntelliJ. It's a little bit, it's still catching up to the Eclipse plugin that we have, but we are actively working on enabling functionality. So again, these plugins allow you to interact with the Azure infrastructure as a service as well as the platform as a service. The Java support as a website, which is it's a platform as a service offering for any website content. We actually run any of the Java runtimes right into our platform as a service. So you should be able to go pick whatever middleware that you want, whether it's Tomcat or Jetty or Glassfish, and then, you know, or even a custom JVM, if you will, and then, you know, deploy it into our Azure website. So we have that flexibility. I won't touch deeply, but we do have SDKs, which is a wrapper of all our REST APIs in all different languages. So if you are a PHP shop and you want PHP for your application and service management, you can do that. If you're a Node-based, Node.js shop or a Python or a Ruby shop, we have all our APIs, not just the virtual machine service, but all of Azure services are wrapped under this SDK. So you don't have to leave your ecosystem, right? Our primary goal, again, is to meet the developers where they are. So we don't want you to kind of give up whatever the skill set that you have or the languages that you use. So we want to be able to make sure that you can use Azure with very little friction. A quick touch on Oracle. Azure remains the only public cloud that supports Oracle officially. So we support Oracle on Windows, but also Oracle on Oracle Linux. Our marketplace has a whole list of offerings that you can go take a look at. Same with IBM. We went into partnership with IBM to make sure their products are available. I didn't call out SAP. SAP also has a content. So literally any solution portfolio that you use in your enterprises, you should be able to find in our marketplace or bring your own license and run it on Azure. A special topic on NoSQL on Linux. This is again an area where we are seeing a lot of Linux workloads, especially large Linux workloads running on Azure, hundreds of virtual machines, in some cases even thousands, right? They're running either Cassandra DB or MongoDB or Cloudera or Hadoop. We get a lot of feedback. We have community-based images running on them for you to get started quickly, from a virtual machine point of view. Or if you want a platform as a service, you can use HD Insight on Linux. So a lot of rich options here. I wanted to kind of highlight a few case studies. These are customers who are actively using Linux, like KP80 that you heard this morning. Cloud Munch is another example. It's an Ajax shop. All their applications, they literally didn't have to change anything to make their applications run on Azure. Virginia Tech, we also saw this on a video this morning. They're also a Linux shop, and they were able to kind of bring their workload. They basically do medical research application, statistical and computational models. And last but not the least, this is the for the fans, rugby fans here. They have an option which allows you to. They basically have an app that they were able to kind of lift and shift to the cloud. It actually uses both Windows and Linux. So I think the key takeaway. I mean, this is my last slide. The key takeaway is, absolutely, you can bring your existing applications to Azure that are running Linux and open source, but we want you to kind of think a bit more, right? The future is where you can kind of bring together these ecosystems that were isolated for a long time, like the Windows ecosystem and the Linux ecosystems. With technologies like containers, now you can think bigger. What can you do with a platform as a service offering? What can you do with containers where you can leverage the best of both worlds and develop applications that actually make you guys more productive, make you guys create IP that is differentiating for you and for your companies, if you will. Same standard set of slides. Give me feedback. If you like this session, if you want more of this, we take your feedback pretty seriously, and hopefully for the next year, we'll be able to get you, more and more content. All right, thank you. I'll be hanging around here. We distributed badges. I don't know if we have any more badges, but if you have good questions, come here and maybe you'll get some goodies. All right, thank you. Come on. Yeah.